Welcome to the Herbs with Rosalie podcast, a show exploring how herbs heal as medicine, as food, and through nature connection. I'm your host, Rosalie de la Forêt. I'm an herbalist teacher and the best-selling author of the books Alchemy of Herbs and Wild Remedies. I created this podcast to share trusted herbal wisdom so that you can get the best results when relying on herbs for your health. I love offering up practical knowledge to help you dive deeper into the world of medicinal plants and seasonal living. My goal is that you'll walk away from each episode feeling inspired to start working with herbs in your everyday life. Each episode of the podcast is available on my Herbs with Rosalie YouTube channel, as well as your favorite podcast app. Transcripts and recipes for each episode can be found at herbswithrosaliepodcast.com. To get the latest news as well as fun bonuses, be sure to sign up for my weekly herbal newsletter. Okay, grab your cup of tea. Let's dive in.
It was great to catch up with Ana Rosa and hear about her new heart-centered project that is empowering women in refugee camps in Iraq. This is really interesting, and you're definitely going to want to hear about this. We also hear about Ana Rosa's philosophy on how you can do a lot with very few herbs, which is an important ideal for all of us. For those of you who don't know her already, Ana Rosa is a medical herbalist, wildcrafter, and author, and she's the heartbeat and passionate founder behind Ana Rosa Skincare. She handpicks wild Icelandic herbs to use in her 100% natural, non-toxic, small-batch skincare products. Ana Rosa's skincare collection is a skincare that empowers because she uses the profits to support organizations dedicated to empowering refugees. These days, Ana Rosa is working in refugee camps in Kurdistan, Iraq, teaching women to make herbal products and managing a charity, Helping Hands, to fund this endeavor. Ana Rosa is the author of Icelandic Herbs and Their Medicinal Uses and has been running her own clinic in Iceland for over 30 years.
Welcome back to the Herbs with Rosalie podcast, Ana Rosa.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure to have friends on, and it's a pleasure to have you back. So as a reminder to everybody listening, you were actually one of the first guests I have. It was a couple of years ago now. And when you were on, we got to hear about your herbal path, and we got to hear about blueberries, and you gave us amazing recipes for breakfast, which are so tasty and yummy. So if people haven't heard that, they should go listen to it after they've heard this one, because I'm so excited to have you here, Ana Rosa. You know, last episode that we did with you, you were just about to embark on this big adventure and this new project. And now that project has been realized, you've been working in it, and now is the update. And so I want to, like, please remind everybody what that is. And I want to hear, I mean, I have 1,000 questions. So, but let's just start there. What is this project?
Right. What I am doing is that I'm working in refugee camps in Kurdistan, Iraq. I'm working with the women in the refugee camps, and I'm teaching them how to make herbal products. And the goal of the project is that they receive the products and can use them for their own good, but also so they can get income. So I'm encouraging them to set up little companies, sell herbal products, set up herbal apothecaries in the refugee camps and earn some income, because they actually don't have any ways of earning an income just like that. So that's what I'm doing nowadays.
Yeah, wonderful. So I want to hear what that looks like. You're traveling there, you know, what you're teaching workshops. Like, what has it been like?
Yeah, so I started this last year, and I went in March last year, and I wanted just to check out how it would be received. And so I'm working with a local organization there. I went over and I taught quite a few workshops on how to make ointments, and it was extremely well received. They were so enthusiastic and interested. And so then after that visit, I was absolutely certain that I could, this was a viable thing to do, a sustainable thing to do. And then I set about to set up a charity. So I have a charity called the Helping Herbs now, a registered charity in Iceland, which is just a setup for those workshops. then continue the story. So my aim is to go over twice per year. And that was sort of the original aim, but that kind of changed when I went over in September. I hired 2 employees, just like that. I had no idea I would do that. So now I have a Kurdish woman teaching workshops every week while I'm not there. And she has to have a driver, so I had to hire a driver because you can't go to the camps otherwise. There is no infrastructure, there's no public transport, so we have a driver as well for that. And so suddenly I have 2 employees and it's just a full-time operation going on, which is absolutely fabulous. And we toured, just with those 2 visits last year, I've toured 525 women already. Wow. And so 525 women have learned how to make several types of herbal products, and they've all received, and we produced 525 products as well, of course. Mm-hmm. And then also we are, Iman, the one I hired, who originally was my translator, is actually studying to be a clinical herbalist with an online school, and I'm training her as well. So that's the idea, that she trains fully as a clinical herbalist and then trains other women in the camp later on when we can do that. And so it's just training and giving it forward. And also we actually have 5 women in the refugee camps who speak enough English that they are also attending online schools on herbal medicine and receiving more education than just the workshop that we are giving. So it's the ball has kind of rolled very quickly, unexpectedly, and it's mm-hmm. all happening. And it's absolutely wonderful how well it's going. And we are doing products that they have asked for, so it's according to their needs. Like mm-hmm. I went over with a workshop on ointment, and then I kept on asking them what else they wanted, and they wanted pain oil. They had so much pain in the body, in the joints, in the muscles, so forth, and in various places. And so we made a pain oil, which has been extremely popular. We are doing hair oil. They wanted something for the hair. The hair is very important. We're doing cough syrups. And I'm sure we'll get a lot more ideas, but this is the start, basically.
Ana Rosa, this is like the definition of grassroots. Like this is like from the ground up.
I suppose like, you're... Yes.
Yeah, you had the inspiration and you kind of made it up as you went along in sense mm-hmm. of like, okay, this is what I think is going to happen. And then you went over there and I love that you worked with people there and so many different levels working with an organization, but also mm-hmm. turning to the women and saying, what do you need? How can I be of service? How can the herbs be of service?
Yeah, it's extremely important that it actually comes from them. And they come up with loads of ideas, some of them not viable, of course. But we're also doing teas and things like that and various recipes. Currently, we actually can't because we need some more health permission from the health authorities for giving internally teas and cough syrup. So we have stopped doing that for the time being. But mm-hmm. otherwise, it's all good, basically.
Yeah. So Ana Rosa, I wouldn't even know where to start. Like, I wouldn't even know, I get that you got an airplane and you go there. I got that much. But I wouldn't even know, like, what to pack, how to get the herbs there, jars, how to, like, get access to, like, if you're making an oil, maybe you don't need heat. But if you get into salve, you're going to need a heat. Anyway, I'm just wondering about, like, some of those logistics mm-hmm. and especially, of course, the herbs. We all want to know about the herbs.
Yeah, so it is, let's say it's a slight challenge. First challenge is that I live in Iceland where I work with very few herbs. So I actually don't know sort of physically that many international herbs. So maybe if you went over there, you would recognize a lot more than I would. So that's my first challenge, basically. And then you go to the markets and a lot of it are spices and some unidentifiable herbs for me because I'm not that good at it. So I just started off in that first visit, just spending a lot of time in the market and trying to find something. And I found things like chamomile and nettle and turmeric and ginger and pepper, spices, of course, there are a lot of spices there. And rosemary, for example, those 3, rosemary, chamomile and nettle, I have been working with those 3 doing just about everything in terms of ointment, in terms of oil. I'm using normal cooking oil Because the thing is, I'm not going to bring anything over. They have to be able to go and get the stuff themselves, always.
Right.
Always has to be sustainable like that. And so I'm not using organic fancy olive oil. I can't even get an organic olive oil there. I can't get olive oil, but not organic. And so all those ideas of when we do quality products, and I run a skincare company, so I know quite a lot about quality and good stuff you use for making products. In this situation, you just have to drop it completely. You use cooking oil because that's what you've got, and you go along with that, and it works absolutely fine. So you just have to go on that level and be happy with it, and it's not a problem at all. Yeah. And it's an interesting process to sort of, you kind of go back to your roots from the beginning when you were starting out. And you have to keep things very, very simple. And I remember I had prepared with few recipes, sort of making up specific things before I went. And a lot of them had fresh ginger, and then there was no fresh ginger in the camps. You know, you assume you have this and that, and then you just don't. And so you have to be very good at basically thinking on your feet. So, and that's what I'm doing all the time. I'm improvising all the time. Yes, so all theories about how you work with herbs and philosophy behind it, just forget it. You've got few herbs to work with and that's it. But the thing is, it really works like that too. Just working with those 4 or 5 herbs, you can do most things. You really can.
I love that. And that's kind of something we brainstormed about talking about today. You know, how can you do a lot with very few herbs? And I feel like that there's a couple of issues or a couple of things we can talk about. That one is the practicality of like how you can do a lot with very few herbs. I want to hear that, but also the philosophy behind it. You're in a situation where you don't have the choice. You have a few herbs available and that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
But I think there's something to be said for all of us to look at our favorite, you know, our materia medica and what's available to us and ask that question of ourselves, you know, even if we aren't working, you know, in refugee camps, this could be a question that we examine. Just for example, I went to Chinese medicine school. We learned over 400 different herbs. And when I say we learned them, we really memorized them, right? Because there's only so much you can do. Of course, people who practice Chinese medicine and who spend decades with those plants, they might learn them very well. So I'm not, you know, trying to admonish that. But just for me in school, within a 3-year time period, I was doing a lot of memorizing and I didn't have a close connection with those plants. And I have just, as a personal choice, I prefer to have my plant close allies. I prefer to really know the plants that I really resonate really well and how to use them in very different ways. And then it just is so practical because I don't have, you know, hundreds of jars of plants that can easily go bad because I don't use them. Anyway, I want to hear your thoughts philosophically. Like, what have you been thinking about as you use very few herbs to do a lot? And then I want to hear practicality. Like, what are you doing?
Okay. So if you just think about those two herbs I'm working with, chamomile and nettle, they are both extremely versatile. And if you just kind of chuck out of the window that you have to have this and that, and you know you only have those two, you just make up a recipe with those two for just about every ailment. And the thing is, it does actually work. I mean, they come with a lot of questions about female complaints. Both of those plants are good for that. They have a lot of inflammation. Both of them are good for that. And the list is long. That is the whole thing. People forget how versatile one plant can be. And you don't think of like chamomile as such a strong plant, but it really is. Actually, and rosemary, the main ingredients of my pain oil is rosemary, and I can't get essential oils. I'm used to working with essential. I make a fabulous pain oil in Iceland with essential oils only. I didn't have that luxury there because there are absolutely no good essential oils. Believe me, I've checked them. They're not good. And so I had to improvise infusing herbs I would never do infusion of. I would always just use a rosemary essential oil instead of actually infusing it. And so I infused that together with ginger and cloves and black pepper. And it came out absolutely wonderfully. So I'm learning new things, you know, and you just, because you're forced to and you don't have an option, you just learn new things. Then that's what herbalists have always done as well in the past. And we tend to people get it because it's so easy to just go and buy the next 10 herbs or whatever. But I'm lucky because I work, and I've worked in Iceland for over 30 years, and I've had little resource. I've been able to pick what I have, but in Iceland, as you know, you've been here, there are not that many plants. So my main staple has been maybe 20 plants altogether. And so I'm used to being in that situation and really have to figure out yarrow does absolutely everything kind of thing. And believe it and actually then use it and then see it working. Because I think it's also the confidence that you don't think a plant does all these things, but it actually does. So I'm seeing reports from the women. I mean, we do a lot of teas with just nettle and chamomile, and then we add maybe a spice to it according to what it is. And we are getting reports back, success stories, you know, it's helping with this and that and that. And the other thing is I can only work in teas because a lot of them are Muslims, not all of them, but a lot of them. So I can't use alcohol to make tinctures. Glycerin, I can't get there. I mean, there's a whole loads of things I cannot get there at all. I've had huge problem with just jars. And we are talking the cheapest quality plastic jars that you can find. I've had really hard time finding that, just absolutely to buy it. And we finally found some supply of the absolute most rubbish jars you could buy. And we are really happy to have them. We still haven't found little bottles for cough syrup. So we're using jars for cough syrups. Do you know? So it's such a different ball game. And then you just become very happy when you find the most cheapest awful quality thing because you actually have it. So it's a really different situation in that sense. It makes you appreciate what you have a lot more.
Wow. And so you've gone twice, and then you have somebody there who's now teaching classes regularly, and lots of people are coming to these classes. Sounds like.
Yes, we have full attendance all the time. We cannot have that many because we are working in containers and they only seat, up to 20 people, but that's also just enough people for this kind of thing anyway. And they often bring children as well. So it can get quite full. But you also asked about things like how you cook them. And we travel around with a gas burner, which is highly uncomfortable, but we also travel around with an electricity stove, but quite often the electricity isn't good enough. So it's sort of, I don't know the English word for it. It burns, it just breaks when we try to use it. So we have the gas stove, we have the electricity, we use what we can each time, depending on the camps we're working in. I'm mainly working in three camps. There are over 20 camps there. I think it's the second largest refugees area in the world, maybe in the Middle East, at least I think it is. So we've decided to work in those three for the time being because the local organization has the most bases in those three camps.
Okay. And I imagine that you probably hear stories from people, and perhaps for some people, herbal medicine is new, maybe, but perhaps for others. It's not.
Yes, it's different between the camps. So, for example, in one of the camps, there are mainly refugee women from Syria, and they are both quite well educated often, and they also know the plants sometimes very well, and they are teaching me. I mean, they have been using rosemary in the cooking and for the hair for decades, that kind of thing. So that's really nice. So we have a lot of exchange there, and it's like, just gives them more confidence and reminds them that kind of thing. And they're really happy about it. And then I go to the next camp, which is, for example, only Yazidis, which is, and they are internally displaced people in Iraq. So they are Iraqis, but with a different religion. They're not Muslim. And there was a genocide on Yazidis 10 years ago by the ISIS. I don't know if you know that. And so those are refugee women from that time. And they quite often have less education. Some of them are illiterate, for example. They never had the opportunity to learn anything being in the countryside and maybe just not being allowed to go to school if there were schools. And so that's a different thing. And they often don't have the same confidence. So I have to be careful of making sure that they get the confidence, basically. That's very much a part of what I'm doing. For example, I taught some of them in March to do ointment, and then the same women came again, and I was asking them if they had made some ointments. And some of them said, no, we couldn't afford the ingredients. Others said, no, we didn't want to do it. We didn't think we could do it as well as you could. And I was kind of a bit shocked. And so we just went through it again. And so you might just have to do it again and again to actually. And so that's also my role, to give confidence, I think. Mm-hmm. And I take that quite seriously, because anybody can be taught, of course. But if you don't have the confidence, you just have to keep on doing it until you have. Mm-hmm. And so that's definitely part of what I'm doing. They're wonderful, those women, you know. We have such fun too. We have a lot of laughter and their children running around, you know. And It's great. Mm.
And what is it like? You mentioned going to markets. What are the markets like when you go?
Very lively.
Yeah.
Very lively, and lots of stuff, lots and lots of people, but perfectly safe. You're very safe in Kurdistan. It's not like people think that you're totally unsafe and all of that, but you're not. And people are extremely hospitable and nice to you always. Doesn't matter where I've been, people are willing to do anything, and no, you can't pay, that kind of thing. And inviting me to tea wherever I go. And it's just, it's really, it's the most hospitable country I've ever been to, I think. And I've been to many countries, and I think I can say that for sure. I've never experienced such hospitality as I have in Kurdistan. It's absolutely gorgeous. And I mean, when I go to the camps, they invite me for lunch and invite me for tea, and they have meager results, you know. It's not like they are made of money. I mean, they don't actually have resources like people think, that there are lots of handouts and organization giving them money, but that's not the case. They actually have nothing. And so if you don't have a husband who gets a job outside in construction or something, then you are dependent on your family or your neighbor for food. Mm-hmm. So the situation is very dire for most of them, I would say, but not all. And it's worse than we imagine, if you see what I mean. Mm-hmm. We just assume somebody is taking care of people, but that is not always the case, unfortunately. So I think it's extremely important that you can bring in something that they want to learn, and that can actually make them money. Mm-hmm. The future. Yeah. I would like to see a herbal apothecary in every refugee camp if I possibly can.
That's a beautiful vision, Anna Rosa.
Yes, and also a herbal school in each camp. That would be good too. I don't know.
I'm wondering if you'd like to speak more. Maybe we've already covered it, I'm not sure, but more on just how you can do a lot with very few herbs. And you mentioned like the pain salve, which you've generously shared a recipe with that for our listeners, and people can go to the show notes to download that beautifully illustrated recipe.
Yeah.
So other, you know, you've kind of mentioned there's just the confidence of like learning how to use one herb in these many different ways.
Yeah, and it's also just switching it up a little bit sometimes, like you would be making something for stomach, for example, and just add a bit of ginger, add a bit of turmeric, add the spices. I use the spices a lot too, but not as main ingredients. And they're also not just using a lot of spices in the cooking necessarily, so it depends. But yeah, those three herbs are probably the main ones. I'm always looking for more herbs, and Iman, the one who is teaching, and I'm so lucky to have her. She's really into it. And so she goes to the market and gets acquainted with the people selling there and learns more about new herbs. And then she informs me and we make something up. We are making up an acne remedy at the moment with herbs I've never used before in my life. And it's actually working fabulously on the people we have tried it on. Mm. It's a demand for acne remedy. I'm kind of famous in Iceland for acne remedies. So I don't
know. I know that about you, actually. Yeah.
I know. So I've had like the best selling acne remedy for the last 15 years in Iceland, which is just a simple tincture, you know. It's not a complicated thing at all. It's got three herbs in it. And so I'm making the same thing, but with totally different herbs in Iraq as well. Mm-hmm. And then it's just like, yeah, like, for example, the ointment is made from chamomile and nettle, surprise, surprise. And then the rosemary is there. And then we just use it for everything. It really works like that. And then they will ask us for the complaints, and I will switch it up a little bit and add some spices. If it's a respiratory thing, we've got fennel in the cough syrup, for example. And hopefully, of course, I'll learn a lot more herbs in both of us. But the thing is also quite a lot of the herbs are imported from Turkey, and we want to concentrate rather on the local herbs, and nettle and chamomile are local. So that's what we are always looking for two. And there is a section in the market by, there are old women who actually pick the herbs themselves, three of them there. And we have become some friends, I would say, and because I always go there and buy from them more than the others who are important from Turkey. Those are the guys, you know, I prefer to buy from the women. But that's also an income for those women in the market. They're not refugees, they're local women, but they highly need an income too. So it has a snowballing effect into the society, what we are doing as well.
Mm-hmm. Wow, and I just had this vision, Ana Rosa, of just like, I have no doubt that an herbalist could learn and teach like five herbs in their lifetime. And like you were saying, chamomile, yarrow, nettle, ginger, these are all herbs that are so complex that work in mm-hmm. so many beautiful and powerful ways that you could spend a lifetime learning mm-hmm. those, you know, just those plants and the simple ways to use them. But I can see as like a student, and I have, like, it's impossible for me to really even understand the challenges that somebody is facing in a refugee camp. Mm. Imagine that simplicity would be really important, and that it's not a simplicity in like a negative way of just like, no. you know, but really a simplicity. It's a powerful thing of like, these five herbs can be incredible for you in so many ways. And yeah.
Yeah. And actually make people confident in that is the important. I can tell you one more story, which is I was working in Honduras once, also doing voluntary work, and I was working with women in the ghetto there, and there was this one midwife, she was quite old, and I was teaching herbs, and each time I said something, it didn't matter what it was, she would reply, well, I used mugwort for that. So it really didn't matter what condition or remedy I was talking about. She used one herb as a midwife all her life. That was all she had. Hmm. And I absolutely believed her. I had no problem believing that mugwort worked for every condition I talked. And I talked about a lot of conditions. So that's another example. She worked with one herb for, I think, 30 years of her life or something like that. And we were just kind of just laughing each time she started. But I also... Linky believed her.
Yeah.
And then she would actually tell me about it. The whole story is when somebody was giving birth and there was this problem, and then she would use mugwort. And then she would use mugwort for this and that and that and that. Just mm-hmm. one. Think of that, you know. That's even more dire straits than what I'm doing.
Well, there's something to be said for the plant ally. Like, you know, that's a time honored role in the herbal world to have a plant ally where you spend a significant amount of time, often not just one plant for 30 years in that case, but that's a really cool story. But we do spend a significant amount of time with one herb to really form that relationship that's needed in order to use a plant in that many ways and really just to get to know a plant. So I like that's not just like a busy work assignment for herbalists. You know, it's something I even said last year. My plant ally was calamus. I spent the year getting to know calamus in a way I've never gotten to know it before. It was really fascinating and really fun. Nice one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Ana Rosa, you're doing so much with this project. You're going there occasionally. Now you have someone teaching weekend classes. There's the buying of the herbs. There's figuring out all these steps, getting the stoves there, getting jars and bottles. My question is, how are you funding this?
Well, my savings are running out pretty quickly. So I had this fabulous idea in the beginning that I could just fund this by the profit of my company. Then I fairly quickly figured out that I wasn't making enough profit for this. And also all my energy has been going into the charity for the last year. So I haven't actually been making much profit because I'm not taking care of my company, basically, as I should. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I can't be in both places, so I concentrate on the charity. So that's number one. I had the notion that I could fund it all by my profits, and that's not happening. And now I've gone into my savings, so I'm just literally using up my savings, which will run out this year at some point, I think. And so I'm very busy learning how to fundraise, which is a totally new thing for me. Mm-hmm. And for me, it has been a bit of a learning curve because I'm highly independent. Icelanders tend to be, and I'm a bit extreme in that. I've always been very independent in my life, so I've never been dependent financially on anyone, and suddenly I am. I have to ask people for money for the charity, and I found that quite uncomfortable, so I'm learning that is an okay thing to do. And I literally have to do it. I have to do it with women. I'm not going to let them down. That's period. I'm not letting them down. That's it. Yeah. And I have two employees who I'm responsible for now and are absolutely fabulous people. And I really have to keep them. And they are kind of like absolutely essential for the project to keep going. Okay. And so I will literally do anything for funding. So I'm looking for companies, I'm looking for individual, anyone who has small amount of money and wants to pay monthly, that kind of thing. That would be fabulous if people could just a few dollars every month. That would be absolutely such a help. And the other thing is, it's not like I'm making anything out of this. I'm not really receiving any salary. The board is voluntary. All the money you donate, every cent will actually go to Kurdistan, will go to the refugee camps. And to the women, to the workshops. And so there, I can absolutely promise that. I don't have an office. I don't have overheads at all. Mm-hmm. So it's very simple. You can absolutely trust that there is not 50% going into office, running office or anything like that, which you can actually find with a lot of organization, but not this one. Definitely not.
That says so much about you, Ana Rosa, that you're like, oh, like, well, first of all, people, you know, who maybe haven't listened to that first episode we did with you, I'm sure we talked about it there, but I know I've had personal conversation with you too. Like, this project was kind of like a universal directive. Like, this was a calling for you. This was just something like you received this information that you needed to do this and you're doing it. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, I remember getting goosebumps when you talked about it. Like, and just to see your, you know, just what is coming out of that and your commitment to it is so inspiring. And it says a lot about you that you're just like, oh, my company will fund this. now your savings are funding this. I mean, I know you believe in this project so deeply. You are called to it.
Well, the thing is, it was like a calling, like you said. I did tell you about it. Now, that's more than 5 years ago. People think this is kind of a spur of the moment kind of thing, but I'm actually quite earthy and I prepare things very well too, you know. But the thing is, I resisted this idea for the first few years because it was so mad. It was just like, I had no connection. I'd never been to the Middle East, didn't know anyone, didn't know any non-profit organization, nothing at all. And so I resisted when the idea came to me that I could actually do this. And then I was just taking out of my hand and I've had absolutely no choice in this, which is a weird thing to happen. And you just have to, in the end, you just trust it, you know. That's all you can do, because I've literally not been able to let go. I did try to get rid of the idea for a while, you know. I really did. And then for a while, I read books and lots of research on, what is it called, altruism or something, when you decide to do that kind of thing. And so I was just kind of checking, is this kind of just an ego trip I want to go on or something? So I actually read lots of research on it too, just to convince myself it was an okay thing to do. But it's like, you have to follow your heart. That's what I'm doing, and I have no option. And just look, I'm meeting all these fabulous people over there and having such a good time with these women, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, I feel I'm very fortunate, I think. I'm fortunate in the way that I get told what to do in that sense, and then I have been able to follow through with it. Mm. And it's giving me so much. Mm. And now, by now, it's like, oh, that's a normal thing to do, whereas most people don't think so.
Well, you're quite the inspiration. And I think what you're doing is such a gift. It's obviously a gift to yourself. You're getting so much out of this, as you said. It's a gift to all the different lives that you're touching in the refugee camps. And I think that gift and blessing can be extended to all of us herbalists, because like you were saying, well, just speaking from my personal experience, when you see stuff about refugee camps, when you see stuff about people suffering en masse who've lost everything, it can feel so debilitating and so saddening. But there's this feeling of like, what do I do? And there, as you said, there are a lot of organizations out there who may be doing good stuff. There are organizations who are not doing good stuff, and a lot of the money is going, you know, into different places.
A lot of them are doing good things too.
A lot of them are, absolutely. And I love you're giving us an opportunity to help be a part of a solution for people who really need solutions in their lives, and in a way that's like calling to us and like our joie de vivre, you know, the our beautiful herbal plant allies and being able to, you know, kind of spread that in a very grassroots way and just be a part of the joy and beauty and solutions as well. So thank you for that, Anna Rosa.
I think it's important actually to have focus. I'm pretty good at having a focus when I want to do something. So instead of being sad about everything in the world, if you can just focus on what is suitable for you, and that might be this product, it might be something where you live or whatever, you know, but if you can focus on one thing, then that really helps to actually do things and help. And talking about the herbal community, I've had fabulous response from the herbal room. There are all kinds of herbalists supporting it and herbal companies and so forth. And then there is just the general public in Iceland. I have been close to tears quite often. There was this old man came to my shop, gave me a fairly good amount of money and said, I have been following your Yazidis for years. I really want to help these women. I'd never met this man in my life before. And those kind of things just absolutely make you cry. And it has sometimes, you know, because it's so beautiful.
It is.
And people just come along with on the journey. That is actually what I'm asking people to do, to come along with on this journey. And I think I am correct in saying, I think this has never been done before in refugee camps. I don't think herbalists have gone in there. I haven't. If anybody listening has heard about it, please let me know. I would like to talk to those who have done that. But so far, I haven't heard of anyone going into refugee camps and actual camps. I know people have been working with refugees in various parts of the world, but not in the camp situations.
I know there's been herbalists in Calais, France.
Yeah.
But I'm not quite sure.
The move.
On the move. Mm-hmm. Okay. So not camps.
Yeah, definitely. And I know of that and I've talked to them. So which is a very good work, definitely.
Well, for Anna Rosa, for people who are like, yes, I have, you know, $5 a month, $10 a month or more that they would love to support you on this journey and go along on this journey with you. How can they get that money to you?
They can just go on the website, which is helpingherbs.org, and just donate it via PayPal. Very easy. Just a few clicks and you have a monthly subscription or one-off subscription, whatever you like. I'd be very happy to have you on the journey with me. And you can also subscribe to my email list. And then I'm going to try to be fairly good at writing emails occasionally and just let people know how it's going. The women I talk to, success stories and so forth, and whatever we come up against as well. So it'd be nice to have people join there too.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing about those. Will you say that URL, the link for that again, one more time?
Yes, it's helpingherbs.org. Or the organization, helpingherbs.org.
Great.
That's the website.
And you also have a course on Icelandic herbs that I want to hear about.
Oh, that's right. Yes. So I have this online course where I'm teaching people 14 Icelandic herbs. Because I mentioned before, I'm kind of an expert in very few herbs. And those are the herbs, those 14 herbs I've really worked with for 30 years. So I know them, I would say, inside out. And there's a lot of Icelandic folklore as well, which is unique, quite a lot of it, which is very interesting for herbalists. Also, those 14 herbs, they grow everywhere. They're not just Icelandic. So all of them will grow in the States or in Canada or are easily available. So it's not like that you have to come to Iceland to get them, but you can absolutely do that too. So if you love herbs or if you love Iceland or both, then this is definitely the course. And I do all my harvesting myself. I wild harvest everything. So I have I teach all the methods I've been using and then lots of recipe too, that kind of thing. So it's definitely for both beginners and advanced. If you want to learn about Icelandic herbs, the healing power of Icelandic herbs. And the thing is, all the proceeds, all the profit from this course will go directly to Kurdistan. And that's why I wanted to tell people about it. And I'm also giving a discount as well. I forgot that. 30% off for the next month. Just with the coupon Rosalie, I think. That's in the show notes.
Nice. So yeah, we'll put that all in the show notes. So all the URLs we're talking about for the Icelandic course, for donating and being a part of the journey, those will all be in the show notes for folks. So I have a lot to say about Icelandic herbs with Anna Rosa because 10 years or so ago, I was in Iceland filming you talking about Icelandic herbs. And that's how we met and became friends. And I got to be behind the camera for that. And I loved it because I loved your expertise and knowledge of the like intimate knowledge of these plants was so much fun. Mm-hmm. And like you said, the kind of historical and folkloric interest in there too. And, you know, it's like if someone likes, even if someone's never been to Iceland before, there's a fun, like travelogue kind of experience of it, of, you know, learning about plants. And like you said, they're plants that we know so well too. So can you give a list of just, or mention a few of them that you're covering in this course?
Yarrow, for example, that grows in the States. Meadowsweet grows in the States. Nettle, of course. Blueberries. Crowberries, I think they're in Canada. I'm not sure in the States. Those are just a few. Willow types, several willow types I'm talking about. Lady's mantle I use a lot. So all herbs that, you know, rhodiola grows in Canada, which I've used a lot, for example. So, yeah. Quite a few, well, 14 of them. I can't remember all of them right now. But those are all the ones which I've really worked with.
I have such fond memories of you. I can remember exactly where we were standing when we were at somebody's like rock garden and they had all this rhodiola just growing there. And you uprooted some and we smelled the roots. And it was just this incredible back. It was a very famous mountain in the background and right on the seabed. And then there was Angelica all there. And Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Angelica isn't the first two yet. Actually, it was the most photographed mountain in the world behind us.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes.
Wow. What's the name of it? I forget.
Kirkjufell. Kirkjufell is the name.
That's why I forgot it.
Of course you did. I still remember the smell of the rhodiola as well. So good.
Yeah. It was such a wonderful experience. So the Icelandic herbs course is going to be wonderful, and that'll be a blessing for people. They'll have the opportunity to learn from you intimately about these plants, and they'll also be able supporting the wonderful work you're doing in Kurdistan. So yeah, all of those links will be in the show notes. Well, Anna-Rosa, this has been so much fun, so interesting to hear about your project. I'm really inspired about how you just really heard that calling and you answered it in a way that really worked for you too. You know, it took you time, it took you some thoughtfulness, and I know there's been roadblocks in the way, but you just kept pursuing it and are continuing to do so. Well, before you go, Anna-Rosa, I have a final question for you. And that question is, how has herbalism surprised you?
Well, in my wildest dreams, I would not have guessed that I would end up in Iraq teaching in refugee camps. I mean, isn't that surprising enough, really? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, absolutely, in my wildest dream, I would never, ever have thought of that. I think that's definitely is the biggest surprise of it all. Mm. That is taking me to the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Never ever had, and I had no idea this would happen, you know. So yes, definitely that is the surprise. Mm-hmm. Well, there are thousands of others, but that's the one, of course, who comes to my mind right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can think of a lot, you know, that, and I guess it's not really surprising to you that you're finding all these different ways to use, you know, a few plants, but just seeing you on that journey as well.
That's kind of normal for you.
That's not
a surprise.
Yeah, but doing it in the place you're doing it. Yeah, that's the surprise.
Yeah, I know.
Well, it makes me think, you know, so often we start on these herbal journeys. Some people were kind of like, they grew up loving plants and interacting with plants. Some of them, like you and me, had something like another direction we thought in life. And then we got, you know, sideswiped into the herbal world. And it is a journey because you don't know where it's going to take you. You know, I don't have a story about Iraq, but I definitely didn't, you know, when I was 20, I didn't imagine where I would be today. And there's something to be said for stepping into that river of the herbal path and seeing where it washes up and listening to your inner intuition, your inner guidance, and following that. Mm. And I'm so glad you did that, Anna-Rosa, because it's a blessing for us all.
It's a beautiful journey to be on the herbal journey, you know, and with all the herbal community as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming back, Anna-Rosa. Thanks for sharing all of your experience with us and the blessing of this project. And I look forward to seeing how it continues to unfold.
Thank you so much for having me, Rosalie.
Thanks for being here. Don't forget to head over to the show notes at herbswithrosaliepodcast.com to download your beautifully illustrated recipe card and to get a transcript of this show. There,
You'll also be able to sign up for my weekly newsletter, which is the best way to stay in touch and make sure that you don't miss a single episode. The best way to check out Anna Rosa's projects is to find her at helpinghands.org, and I'll list more contact details for her in the show notes. If you'd like more herbal episodes to come your way, then one of the best ways to support this podcast is by subscribing on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. I'd also love to hear your comments about this episode. What's your biggest takeaways? I deeply believe that this world needs more herbalists and plant-centered folks, and I'm so glad that you're here as part of this herbal community. Also, a big round of thanks to the people all over the world who make this podcast happen week to week. Nicole Paul is the project manager who oversees the whole operation, from guest outreach to writing show notes to actually uploading each episode and so many other things I don't even know. She really holds this whole thing together. Francesca is our fabulous video and audio editor. She not only makes listening more pleasant, she also adds beauty to the YouTube videos with plant images and video overlays. Tatiana Rusikova is the botanical illustrator who creates gorgeous plant and recipe illustrations for us. I love them. I know that you do too. Christy edits the recipe cards, and then Jenny creates them as well as the thumbnail images for YouTube. Michelle is the tech wizard behind the scenes, and Karen is our student services coordinator and customer support. For those of you who like to read along, Jennifer is who creates the transcripts each week. Xavier, my handsome French husband, is the cameraman and website IT guy. Thanks to Rising Appalachia for their beautiful song, Resilience. Find more of their music at risingappalachia.com. It takes an herbal village to make it all happen, including you. Okay, you've lasted to the very end of the show, which means you get a gold star and this herbal tidbit. As Anna Rosa and I mentioned, about a decade ago, I had the pleasure of traveling to Iceland and spending some time with her, and it was so much fun. I was only there 3 days, but it was over the summer solstice, so it never got dark, and we barely slept, and we were just constantly on the go. So 3 days kind of feels like so expansive, really. I did all the things. You know, I ate the fermented shark that's famous there. I ate the skyr. I definitely like the skyr, which is a type of yogurt, much better than the fermented shark. I loved watching Icelandic horses run in their beautiful way over the plains there. And we just saw so many sights together. One funny memory I have is walking through some willow shrubs on this trail that we were on. And Anna Rosa turned around and looked at me and said, "Do you know what to do if you get lost in a forest in Iceland?" And I said, "No, I don't. What do you do?" "Well," she said, "you stand up." Which says a lot about how tall the trees in Iceland are. So for those of you who aren't able to travel to Iceland anytime soon, I highly recommend taking Anna Rosa's Icelandic Herbs course. It's a fun way to travel there from the convenience of your own home, and you'll get to learn many new insights about many of your favorite plants. And it's a great way to support the work that she's supporting in Iraq.